Well, we continue tonight to follow the course of David's life, man after God's own heart. But we find him encountering considerable difficulty, facing immense hostility, so that now he is a fugitive. He's a man on the run. And that's our title tonight, Man on the Run. And if you will, to just give, as it were, a flavor of our thoughts, 1 Samuel chapter 23 and verse 12, and the way in which David discovers that the people of the city that he and his men at great risk had just delivered from Philistines are actually going to then deliver him up, David, to Saul. So far from saying thank you very much, they're going to give him over to Saul, that Saul might do his worst to David. And of course, that Saul achieves that end, and that chapter is full of remarkable escapes and things where Saul is suddenly frustrated. He seems to be getting help, but no, the Lord's hand's against him, and he doesn't prevail. But David is now a fugitive, well and truly. You see him journeying, don't you, through wildernesses and inhospitable places in order to evade detection. We noted last time, though, and we see it again here in 1 Samuel 23, that Jonathan, the eldest son of Saul, who might have did entertain expectations of being the future king, but now can see that God is with David and that his own father behaving abominably toward David. He's fully persuaded of that. And he sides with David. He has to side against his father at great personal cost. And in himself, reconcile himself to the fact that David, not he, Jonathan, will be the future king. Well, Jonathan's friendship is a real tonic to David, proves it to be again here. And sadly, this is actually the last meeting on earth between these two good friends. And we looked at that last time, something of the essence of their friendship. But Jonathan's father, Saul, now is just going from bad to worse. Degenerating, a whole breakdown of his character, his instability, this irrational searching out of David, this monstrous attribution of such bad motives to David, that he believes, as it were, now his own lies. He believes now his own reasonings. He really does think that David intends ill and is now absolutely entrenched in that view, can see nothing good in him in that way. And though time to time there's a weakening in that resolve, and time to time there's a change, but it's not a real change. And he reverts then back to type, and he reverts to perhaps even worse than he was before. And we see there the downward spiral of this man, projecting, as people often do, don't they, onto David his own thoughts, what he would have done in that position. If he was David, he might well have wanted to take the king for himself, wanted the throne, wanted the crown. He might well have imagined himself fighting for it in the state that he's now in. And he projects onto David that kind of attitude, which, well, David is not in that at all. And we'll see in future weeks how in this time of great pressure, when he's a man on the run, he's a man of mercy, extraordinary mercy. Chapter 23 of 1 Samuel, this is a catalogue of ways in which he's been betrayed left, right, and centre. And yet, still we find, coming from his soul, and seeing future weeks, great mercy, very merciful attitude. Not just a sort of temporary fit, just as Saul's repentances, it's like a temporary fit, but then he goes back to normal. David, actually, his normal is actually to be merciful, although some occasions he has to work a little harder to get to that position. Nevertheless, that's what is in his heart to be. So he's a man now on the run. He has to go through a tortuous journey, the time to go through the entirety of the narrative. And as I've said at the beginning of this series, we're kind of just drawing upon certain wider themes, bigger themes, rather than following the narrative, as it were, from place to place and studying, as it were, where all these mountains might be and deserts are and so forth. So he's been to see Samuel. He's been also to the priests and the high priest in particular, Ahimelech, at No. But while there, and he receives there the bread, which in theory is only for the priests to be able to use, but here is an emergency, and Ahimelech allows that the bread that is to be replaced on the table there before the Lord in the tabernacle that was in place at that time. But unfortunately, Doeg, an Edomite, was there as well. David saw him, and this there was instinctive, isn't it? Trouble. He saw trouble. He rightly saw trouble too, because Doeg was quick to report back to Saul David's whereabouts. Saul, in his fury, ended up killing Ahimelech, the high priest, and all the other priests, regarding them as part of this wider plot against David. Though at that time, priests, the high priest and the priests knew nothing of what was actually happening, didn't realize David was now a man on the run, but they paid for Saul's jealousy, madness, with their own lives. And so this has become a feature now, David having to flee, nowhere safe. He's putting other people's lives in jeopardy. He goes amongst the Philistines, 1 Samuel chapter 21. We'll come to that in a few weeks' time. Ends up having to feign madness before then returning back to Judah. But not the kind of habited environments, not the towns, but in fact, for the most part, in the wildernesses. Keilah, the town there that he delivers, well, he doesn't have to stay there too long. It's dangerous. And he's out where he's the cave of Adullam. We find him there. Then the wilderness of Ziph and Maon, down in the southern part of Judah. Very barren places. Very, very infertile places. This is where you go to hide. And vast areas. Hopefully you won't be detected. But the Ziphites there have got their spies looking for him. In the meantime, David has found security for his parents in Moab. That's interesting. Moab. It's very interesting because, of course, up the family tree, great-grandmother, was Ruth, the Moabitess. And something of a sympathy, something of a togetherness in that makes it, at that point at least, to be a safe environment for him to place his parents in safekeeping because nobody's safe. Anybody with any connection with David is liable to be put to death by Saul on just a whim and a hunch. So it was necessary to find safety for his parents. Well, I read at the outset there and Revelation chapter 12, verses 13 to 17. We're going to exegete the entirety of that, but take from here that the dragon and the serpent that is spoken about is the devil and the woman is the church and all those who belong to the church, true church. Being persecuted, dragon enraged against her. And there's something of that here. There is something of that devilish persecution of true believers, those who adhere to the testimony of Jesus, as it's put in Revelation 12, verse 17. And notice how it talks about the earth helping God's people, helping the woman, how she's given wings, or how the earth opened up from... Well, very graphic, isn't it? Serpents that were spewing out water from its mouth and such things. Yet the earth helps the people of God. Well, you find helps, don't you? And we'll come to those in a moment in this passage and elsewhere. God is with his people, protecting, guarding. Just as there in Revelation, we have a new covenant feel to it, a new testament feel. But nevertheless, it's the same persecution. There's David. He had it. The Lord Jesus Christ, of course, had it. And the church has it. It's something that comes with being believers. First heading, though, guarding against bad tactics. And I'll enlarge a bit more upon this in a future sermon, but just to dwell a moment here upon David's sojourn amongst the Philistines. Yes, you heard it right, amongst the Philistines. He went to Gath. Gath of all cities, associated with Goliath. Goliath, you mean the giants whom he slew? Yes, he's gone there. Well, we'll reflect a little bit more upon that and why. Yeah, he did that in a future sermon. But suffice it to say here that it was not a good idea and that this was a bad move. Bad tactics that David here employed. And we find actually perhaps something of his reflection on these things and his what he learned about these things from some of the Psalms that correlate with this period of his life. Instances being Psalm 34 and Psalm 56. And Psalm 56, perhaps we find there that yes, he learnt. He learnt from his mistakes. It's the thing to do, isn't it? There. Bad move, bad tactics, David. Going to the Philistines to look for help there. Why is your trust in God? But that returned to him. And well, I won't give too much away about what I'm going to be saying in the future sermon. But basically, we shouldn't judge David too harshly. This is a huge pressure that he's under, and that his faith should fail him at this time when he feared for his life. And might have a good reason to suppose that, that people are dying all around him. Priests have been put to death or are about to be and such things. So Psalm 56, just to read a few verses from that, where he is, we see there when the Philistines captured him in Gath. But they'd put him a bit under house arrest there. Be merciful to me, he says in verse 1, O God, a man would swallow me up, fighting all day. He oppresses me. My enemies would hound me all day. For there are many who fight against me, O Most High. We've got Saul and his men in view. We've got the Philistines now in view, the whole world set against him. He reflects, verse 5 and 6, all day they twist my words, and their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather together, they hide, they mark my steps, and they lie in wait for my life. But we find him able to reflect at the end of the psalm upon a deliverance that the Lord, and it's the Lord he's speaking about here, isn't it? That he's had done some strange things. And we'll come to it another day, but feigning madness in order to escape the sort of fear that is mounting, that this man David is a bit of a threat to us Philistines. And so he feigns madness, as if to say, you don't need to worry about me. Well, it was not the best moment in David's life there. And here he is in Psalm 56, verses 12 and 13. Vows made to you are binding upon me, O God. I will render praises to you, for you have delivered my soul from death. Have you not kept my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living? Deliverance. Found deliverance. Bad move, going to the Philistines. If you understand, David is still a young man. Saul's behavior is unpredictable, to say the least, and very, very threatening. So he has to retrace his steps. But he does it reflecting on the Lord's deliverance to him, that his feet were kept from falling. Could have ended so disastrously in Gath. Could have ended so differently. But now he's escaped and he's able to walk before God in the light of the living. We find him other time as well that actually his behavior towards Ahimelech was not good. The high priest on his arrival there, he doesn't explain that actually he's a fugitive and things are dangerous, and that for you to be seen with me is a dangerous thing. And he is vague with Ahimelech about what he's doing and why, and really leads in a sense there to the deaths of those priests and Ahimelech the high priest. So again, a need to trust God the more. Perhaps he should have been more forthcoming with Ahimelech, warned him of the dangers that lay ahead. Allowed Ahimelech really there to make his own risk assessment, if you will, rather than finding out there to his cost later on that actually David was not just on an errand for the king, but was actually escaping from him. Psalm 34, verses 4 to 7, where we see that this also comes out of his time of reflection after his stay in Gath. And he speaks there perhaps to what he had to learn and where he had to look for his help. I sought the Lord and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. He looked to him more radiant and the faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried out and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps all around those who fear him and delivers them. That's where he's reached, that he needs to look to the Lord. For the Lord can deliver. Deliver his people from all manner of difficulties and hardships. But when we're under pressure, Dear friends, isn't it the case we need to watch for bad decisions that we may be rushed into making and which have consequences not only for ourselves but for other people, and bring them into a messy situation where they learn later on that maybe we hadn't told them the whole story, and they then find out to their cost. Always good to be open, always good to be truthful, always good. Confidences have to be kept sometimes, and we can't always tell the whole story, but to indicate that there is a story and to ensure that people understand that if they're entering into this particular situational relationship, that they need to know there may be a cost to them. David misses that, doesn't do that, and in that way brings a little guilt upon himself there. We have to be careful. It's easily done. And we're going to be dealing with David in a quite sympathetic way when we come to look at him. There he is, under great threat, great danger. Suddenly he's gone native, if you like, forgotten the Lord, now making it up as he goes along, disastrously at times. We have to guard that we don't fall into the same mistake that it's so easy to do, and to end up then a little bit trapped in our own kind of world of intrigue that we've made, and getting caught out and getting other people into difficulty too. Guarding then against bad tactics. Here is the second heading, though. Betrayal is a reality. Betrayal is a reality. And this comes through, doesn't it, in that chapter that we read. Betrayal. David, the man on the run, needs friends, do with friends. Well, he has some friends. They rally to him. But many people don't. Even people that he has helped don't, and end up there being prepared. The Lord tells David, being prepared to hand him over to Saul, to give him over to the very man who is seeking his life. So David here, he himself is now at the receiving end of other people's behavior and bad decisions. And these are the decisions of fearful people. David himself, fearful, made his set of bad decisions. Here are other people. They're fearful, and likewise, they're making some poor, poor decisions. He saved the people, Keilah, hasn't he? Showed great courage, great leadership. The men who were with him were very, very uncertain about this. And though he'd sought the Lord, note that, he'd sought the Lord, they still are wondering, are we going to be able to win this battle? This is a battle here that looks rather difficult. The Philistines are strong. Are you sure we got the right guidance? And David seeks the Lord again. And they have the right guidance. And David shows leadership, spiritual leadership, as well as military leadership. And the campaign is a great, great success. City is freed from Philistines. Now has liberty again. And you think they might be grateful, wouldn't you? You would think they might be grateful. Here were these men who at cost to their own lives, risking their own necks in this, have come and set them free from their oppressors, the Philistines. Or whatever they knew, and they knew something, didn't they, about the ins and outs, what was going on, and Saul pursuing David. Might have thought that they would be grateful enough for David and his men and their work to offer them sanctuary. Could have been a walled city, got gates. But therein lay the danger. But now they're there. If the people actually were not sympathetic, after all, despite what David had done, David and his men are trapped. They're in a city and no escape. And that, of course, is what Saul sees in this. He realizes David's in Keilah, in that city. He's trapped. He's making haste to catch him. But we see that David seeks the Lord, and the Lord warns him that that is what the people will do. Hence verse 12 in our kind of main theme for the evening. Will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hand of Saul? What's that question, you might think? Well, of course they won't. They'll be grateful to you, David, and to all the men. But no. And the Lord said, they will deliver you. Well, we don't hear or see there David's reaction, what he thought. Rather, they move quickly. David and his men, about 600, arose, depart from Keilah, and went wherever they could go. Not places that had provision for them. Town, a nice place to settle. But no, that was not to be their resting place, just as our Lord Jesus had no resting place and the true church, in a sense, that we're always, in a way, on the move. There's no kind of calm and peaceful settling down. Betrayal and what people will do when they're afraid, never, never underestimate what frightened people, fearful people will do and what loyalties they might break. Here, the people of Keila and other people in the kingdom were afraid of Saul. They knew what he was like. They'd heard by reputation that he can get the sword out and kill people that are seen to be sympathetic with David. So we can understand that. But it's still really, given David's courage and the example of that, a little sad that there they lack courage and are unwilling to show their debt of gratitude to David and his men. Friendships, well, Jonathan stands out in that example, standing by his friend come what may. Even his father is now minded to kill his own son. But he stands with David, but the people of Keilah don't. That betrayal can be a reality. And it only goes from bad to worse in a sense, because having then taken refuge amongst the Ziphites, and we're in remote places here, now the Ziphites really take as it were the initiative and hot-foot it to Saul. We see them in verse 19, going to where Saul held court at Gibeah. Is David not hiding with us in the strongholds in the woods, in the hill of Hakilah, which is on the south of Jeshimon? Well, they gave the directions there, didn't they? He's your sat now. They'd told him absolutely where the location is. Being helpful. Well, that's what fear again can do. Do they not know that Saul's a tyrant? Do they not know that his behavior left him totally unsuited to being king? Did they not know that God was with David, who'd slain Goliath, and then gone on to slay his tens of thousands? But here, fear again dominates, and they're willing now to be informants and to help Saul in his efforts to pursue and then catch and kill David. But notice there that even though for the true church can be betrayal, that those who once were loyal suddenly become not, and they've gone. They're off following some other creed or behaving in ways that we just cannot quite understand or get our heads around. And that is throughout the history of the church, the fact. But God is with his people. In the midst of betrayal, he is with his people. And we could notice in these chapters, we can just do a sort of fleeting glance, but for you to look back into chapter 22, where David at that point was in the hills and caves of Adullam. But now Gad the prophet in verse 5 of 1 Samuel 22 says, "Do not stay in the stronghold. Depart, go to the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Herith. Danger. Gad the prophet, God had told him, danger. And while it had been a good place to be, it had sanctuary, there was protection. Saul was very thorough, and it was on his list of places to come. And unbeknownst to Saul, God was giving David help and instruction through the prophet Gad. Help is given, therefore, and wonderful answers to prayer, too. We notice that in chapter 23, in the seeking of the Lord, Abiathar, the only priest who escaped from Nob, son of Ahimelech, managed to get away, tell David, brought the ephod with him, which had within it there, and we fully unknow what these were, the Urim and the Thummim, but this which was used to discern the will of God, and to determine what was God's mind in a particular situation. They had the help of that. So first of all, that yes, go up, God would deliver Keilah into your hand. And then Saul will come looking for you there, and the people of Keilah will now deliver you up. And this, again, is the Lord's help. And again, notice this supernaturalism in all of it. This account of places and what's happening, it's very earthbound, isn't it? It's very much localities. But then notice how when David is at this mountain, verse 26 of chapter 23, and Saul is encircling the mountain. This could be it. This could be curtains, we might be thinking here. Where can David go? He's trapped. But then verse 27, a messenger came to Saul saying, "Hurry and come, for the Philistines have invaded the land." Well, that's a greater emergency, requires Saul's attention, and he calls off the siege. David then is able to go up from there and dwelt in strongholds at En-Gedi, we read in verse 29. They called that place the Rock of Escape. And it was the Rock of Escape, and it was God who gave them that deliverance. News that reached Saul. How come then, at that point of that time? What a providence. God is the architect of providence. Supernatural providences. Helps that can come to his people just when they need it. When they all know. When they've been betrayed. When hardships come. But their God's guidance is with them. His help is there. And he can make events turn out in most remarkable ways. News reaches Saul's ears, much as it did Rabshakeh's when he was besieging Jerusalem. Hezekiah was shot in there like a bird in a cage, as Sennacherib said. And then they hear that Tiahaka, the Ethiopians, had come and were creating difficulty and had to call off the siege, at least for a while. And this is the Lord's doing. Well, final heading, the bonds of fellowship. Bonds of fellowship. That out of times of adversity, David, the man on the run, hard, hard period of his life, but he finds friends. Well, we knew about Jonathan, we were looking at him last week, but he finds other friends too. These 600 men, people that come out to him, the cave of Adullam in chapter 22, and are now fighting alongside him at Keilah, standing with him. Soon he's got families as well who have joined with him too. And that's what adversity can do. It can bring the most solid and lasting friendships. It's where it happens when you're risking your life together, isn't it? Like people in the armed forces. They stay in touch with each other. They've fought battles together, saved each other's lives. There's a bond, faced the same difficulties and hardships, endured them together. And there is a bond, lasting friendship that comes because of adversity. This is what happens here. We learn in scripture, a brother is born for adversity. That was true of Jonathan, it certainly was. But these other people too that have come to David have been there. Not only Jonathan strengthening his hand, but these other people have as well. Psalm 142, verse 7, comes from this period as well. Prayer when he was in the cave. We take that to be the cave of Adullam, which we mentioned in his own chapter 22. At the end of the psalm, he says this, "Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise your name. The righteous shall surround me, for you shall deal bountifully with me." The righteous shall surround me. People sympathetic to my cause who are also on that wavelength, wanting to serve God. Seen through Saul, recognized that David now is the man after God's own heart, and they've rallied to him. They've suffered under Saul, quite a few of them, been dispossessed, they're in debt. They realize that Saul is not the king that they need. David is. Now they're with him. And David appreciates their solidarity with him. At his time of great need, in adversities, under siege from Saul, his life in his hands at all time. And here are these people alongside him. They're going to suffer with him if needs be, die with him. Recognizing David's leadership, staying strong with him. We mentioned that this is the last time that Jonathan will meet with him. Jonathan, again, at great risk. He's with his father, the army, and he's just sort of sneaked away. He knows where David is and looks him out there, and we find him in verses 16 and through to 18, talking to him and forming again, renewing their covenant together. This with something very much which is part of Jonathan's most impressive character. There's something very, very impressive about this man. And it's touching when he says that, "Do not fear." That's saying to David what he needs to hear, isn't it? What fear has driven him to all kinds of bad decisions, and fear has been the curse there of the Ziphites and the men of Keilah. They've been gripped by fear. "Do not fear," he says. "The hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you." Strong, isn't it? That's a word there that comes from the Lord to David, and it's true. "You shall be king over Israel." That's true. It's testified to it, but we hear with sadness the next, "And I shall be next to you." Not to be Jonathan, it's to die in battle quite soon. That is not quite to be fulfilled. But we're so touched by his modesty, humility, that he's going to take second place to David. He'll be happy to play second fiddle there, if you will, that David is the appointed man. They make a covenant together. And so we see that Jonathan strengthened his hand in God, verse 16. That's what friends do, isn't it? They strengthen our hands in God. A word in season, encouragement, do not fear. We need to hear that. All of us need to hear that at times, just to have our perspective put right. God is with you. God can deliver you. Don't be afraid. Whatever the hardships and adversities, that's not going to destroy the church. Be of good courage. Press on. And this is where David is hearing Jonathan, perhaps hearing it too from other people, more spiritual minded people amongst that company. Man on the run. Fugitive. That's really the church. We're in the wilderness there. We have, as it were, in the world at large, not much of a sympathetic hearing much of the time, but that's where we are to be to each other on the fellowship, that band of pilgrims on our journey together to glory. God with us, strengthening each other's hands in the things of God. Or may the Lord encourage us and help us. We haven't got literal deserts to be in. We're not there camped out in the cave of Adullam or on the hill Hakilah, and a literal Saul after us. Well, there are enemies enough there to have got much ill will toward the church. But beyond, great God of Scripture, great God of Israel, our God too. Amen.